Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Fantasy Island executive producers Elizabeth Kraft and Sarah Fain join me next in an internet radio exclusive. And that's just the start of what's coming your way the next 2 hours. Our other guests, Balaji Krishnan, the chief executive of new TV set maker and Player Displaced, Catalyst TV Festival winning pilot maker Mars Abna, or Hans Abna, and Eric Garcia, the mastermind of groundbreaking Netflix caper series, Kaleidoscope, that premieres on New Year's Day. Also ahead, YouTube takes NFL Sunday Ticket, Greg Berlanti's TV future, and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. I present the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Google Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and other leading podcast destinations. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Great to have you with us for an extra special edition on the Thursday afternoon of the Programbot TV's current and future. 42 degrees at the top of the hour. We've got rain here in the New York area, also other places up and down the East Coast. We have blizzard conditions going on in other parts of the East and the Midwest. We are expecting heavy rain later today into tonight and to much of tomorrow. And wherever you are, we hope you're dealing with the weather as best as you possibly can on this day before Christmas Eve, 2022. And we invite you to be part of the program. Interact with any or all of our guests. How do you do that? You pick up the phone, you dial in, and you use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. And we've got our chat room going, and it's waiting for you. It's SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. While the program is on the air, you can interact with others by using Facebook Timeline. Check on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Stream, follow the instructions, and other people live with you. Because of our guests in the first hour, we're going to hold off news notes that we normally do around this time at the top of our second hour. So make sure you stay tuned for that. We'll give you the details on the YouTube deal with NFL Sunday Ticket and more. But right now, joining us live from Los Angeles in an internet radio exclusive, the executive producer of Fantasy Island, starting season 2, January 2nd, on Fox, Elizabeth Kraft, and Sarah Fain. Elizabeth and Sarah, happy holiday season to you.
You too. Thanks for having us, Simon.
It is a pleasure to have you both. Elizabeth, we'll start with you. What's it like to get this season 2 finally off the ground?
Well, I mean, we're so excited because we like it even more than season 1. And, you know, we finished it a few months ago. So we have been just waiting for everyone to see it. And it turns out, I think, perfect timing because of, you know, coming on in the winter, I think everybody's going to be ready for an island escape.
Sarah, Fantasy Island is one of the most unique anthology series in the history of weekly television because of the continuing characters, because of the continuing environment, the island itself, and the fact that it's multiple plots in every episode. And that's the way Aaron Spelling, who created, did it. And it's also, you're doing the second reboot of Fantasy Island. The first one was with Malcolm McDowell, which was more on a sinister nature. Why do you think people are accepting both Rosalind Sanchez in the Mr. Rourke character, or Ms. Rourke character, if you will, and they're accepting your version of it?
Well, I think we really honor the original show. We loved it when we were kids. And, you know, Elena Rourke, played by Roz, is Mr. Rourke's great niece. So I think people really feel the connection between them. And, you know, our show has a lot of the same just like fun and appeal and emotion of the original. You know, I think we lean more into the fun and the like twist and surprise fun way than the original, which was sometimes a little grim. But we really want to kind of, you know, coming out of this really rough time, make people feel good, and we want to feel good when we talk about it. So we're really loving working on the show, too.
Elizabeth, if Aaron Spelling was still around, one of the questions I would ask him is, what kind of a challenge is it to match the plots that happen in each episode? I mean, that's one of the key things, is that you want to have in each episode two or three different storylines that all get resolved and that fit the nature of the particular episode. What kind of a challenge is it for you and Sarah to actually pick, like, which plot lines go in what episode and how they are matched up?
Yeah. Well, it is a challenge. What's funny is, you know, we have a group of writers we work with, and we find that our best fantasies, the best plot lines, come from personal desires of the writers. We find that the most emotional and sort of simple and visceral stories are the best. And those usually come from our lives. And then what we do is try to kind of balance a more serious plot line with something that's more fun. Because, of course, you know, you want to keep every show, you want to have humor, even if we may in another story be, you know, dealing with something serious, like someone who's, you know, coping with the death of a loved one or something. Then you want to balance that with something that's a little more whimsical. So we always keep that in mind and kind of balance out the episodes.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, how has Rosalind made the character of Rourke her own, given the fact that Ricardo Montalban, who I think is one of the most underrated actors who ever lived on this earth, made that character so memorable, so magnetic, so powerful?
You know, it's interesting because I couldn't agree more. Roz has just completely embodied the character of Elena Rourke. And I think maybe it's because she's kind of not competing with Mr. Rourke. She just is her own fabulous character. And she is such an extraordinary actress. She just brings so much to it. Like, she really fills it out. And one of the things we do on our show is, you know, we really get into Ms. Rourke's personal life. It's not just about the fantasies. So we get to also make our Rourke more layered and complex, you know, which just gives Rosalind more to do, which you can't have her do too much because she's amazing.
We are talking with the executive producers of Fox's version of Fantasy Island, going to second season on January 2nd at 8 p.m. East Pacific Time, Elizabeth Kraft and Sarah Fain. They're both live from Los Angeles this half hour. On tomorrow, we'll be televised. And we're happy to have you with us for a big two-hour extravaganza. We're just getting started with our first half hour. Simon Abbott with you live from Nueva York, where it is 42 degrees and raining at the top of the hour. If a question or comment for our guests, give a call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Friday on tomorrow be televised back in our regular day and time period, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific. Our main guest will be Juan Ayala. He is a terrific columnist for Media Village, the Media Leadership website. He's also become a very popular video host. In fact, came out with a video earlier today that you ought to see. And we'll talk to him about what he thinks of some of the best and worst developments of TV 2022. We'll get his thoughts on the state of multicultural television, which he's a big expert on. And we will also find out his thoughts about how 2023 TV will go. Juan Ayala from Media Village, that's our lead guest tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. Sarah, since we just brought up Rosalind's character, how do you see Rosalind's character as Rourke developed in season two?
Well, I'm happy to say we get to go a little deeper into her love life. We have a wonderful actor on the show, John Gabriel Rodriguez, who she has kind of an on-again, off-again thing with. And we also get to see her relationship with Ruby, who is kind of our character for the tattoo character, her second in command. We get to see her relationship with Ruby really evolve in some very interesting ways. I'll leave it at that.
All right. So we leave that. Let's go to you, Elizabeth, about the guest stars. Who can we expect in the first episode on the second, and who are some of the other guest stars that will be popping up on the island this year?
Oh, my gosh. This is one of the most fun parts of our job, is casting the guest stars. We're so excited because in the first episode we have Cheryl Hines and Rachel Harris, who are real-life best friends, playing best friends on the show, who get to go back to their senior prom in high school and rule the school. And they were so much fun to work with, both being comedians. They did a lot of great ad-libbing. And then in the third episode, we have Terry Hatcher and James Denton playing a married couple. So we've got a little Desperate Housewives reunion. And then we have so many other guest stars coming up this season. It's like, it's just like an embarrassment of riches when the guest star front.
When you have those kind of matchups with the guest stars, Sarah, how do you work that out? Do you tell the writers, okay, we have these two people coming in, use something from their personal life, let's say, as a storyline, or try to figure out something about their careers that might work? I remember the Fantasy Island episode very well with the game show hosts and the rivalry. And the whole idea was, let's do a game show where one game show host outwits the other in sort of a battle of wills.
Yes, and I will say we have a game show host this season as well, played by Andy Richter, and he's so hilarious. But it kind of works in a multitude of ways. We have the most wonderful casting director, of course, in the world. His name's Mark Rutman, and he really looks for interesting pairings of people or trios of people. For example, we did a Melrose Place episode in season one with three of the amazing women from Melrose Place. And so he will find people. Fox will say, hey, what about this? Or we'll come up with a story and say, hey, are there any people who would be really great for this kind of role? So like in season one, we had Dave and Odette Annable, who are married, and they played a married couple who changes bodies. And then, of course, this season we have Terry Hatcher and James Denton, who, you know, for enormous fans of Desperate Housewives, as we are, having them together again was just so exciting for us. So we always look for something that's going to give an episode a little extra zing.
For either of you, do any of the guest stars, once you book them, do they suggest a plot line?
They haven't so far, but we would certainly be open to that. Usually we're going to them with a story. And trying to entice them, you know, to join with a story that we think they'll like. But certainly if there was, you know, someone that we wanted who had like a certain kind of fantasy they really wanted to, you know, play out, we would be open to that. I mean, the great thing about Fantasy Island is, you know, there's just no end to the number of fantasies people can have, and you can take almost anything and make it a great story, twist it, turn it, and make it something, you know, that's going to work for the show.
Mm-hmm. Now, this season, starting with the second episode to run in January, you're going to do something that Aaron Spelling and everybody involved in the original Fantasy Island never did, which was to have a running arc that goes over a bunch of episodes, not just it doesn't get resolved in the first episode. Why did you decide to do it, and then talk about what that arc is?
Well, we decided to do it because, you know, as writers, we love serialized stories, and it turns out our audience also really loves serialized stories. So we wanted to, you know, both do it because we love to do it, and also the feedback that we're getting from people is that they're really interested in Rourke and Ruby and Javier and what's going a little deeper into them and their relationships. So, you know, it's so much more for us compelling and interesting to be able to do both the serialized and the episodic elements of the show, and they really play off of each other. Our characters learn from our guests, and our guests learn from our characters, but, you know, who we're really rooting for, the people we see every week are Elena and Ruby and Javier. So, and they're all so fantastic as actors and as people that we just love spending time with them.
Mm-hmm. Now, the plot line, I understand, deals with a woman named Helene. She is played by Alexa Mansour, who we last saw in The Walking Dead World Beyond, ran two seasons on AMC. Including last year.
Yeah.
And she comes to the island because her mother just passed away, and she is trying to find her biological father.
Yeah.
And how do you sort of, again, how do you sort of introduce that and then try to weave it into a bunch of episodes in serialized fashion without upsetting the apple cart of the other plots?
Well, one thing we do is she comes as a guest, and the way the story plays out, she ends up staying on the island. And the way that we kind of work it out where it can be not just one episode but numerous is that we, in a way, make her part of our Fantasy Island, you know, core. So she then doesn't just have her own fantasy going on. She's also interacting with Ruby and with Rourke. She's helping, you know, we have this character of Ruby who's an old lady, really, in a young woman's body. And Helene starts to also help Ruby, like, get in touch with her youthful self. So the way we kind of keep the stories going is that it's not just about Helene's fantasy, although that is still playing out in its own way. It's about her really impacting everyone on the island.
Mm-hmm. Let's dig a little deeper into the two of you and your careers in television. Elizabeth, we'll start with you. What was your road to Fantasy Island?
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, I should start by saying Sarah and I went to high school together in Kansas City, Missouri. That's where the road really started, I would say, when we were 14. But, you know, I started out as an editor of young adult books and then made my way to L.A. with Sarah. We moved together. And, you know, we always say we were friends. You know, in high school, and then we got together in Kansas City one Christmas, actually about this exact same time of year, and went out for drinks, and Sarah was on her way to LA, and I say, you know, beer one, I said, I'm going to come visit you. I was in New York. I'm going to come visit you for 3 weeks, and then by beer three, I decided that I was moving to LA with her. And we were very lucky in that we had one friend from high school who was living in LA, and he happened to be an agent. Sarah, I let you take over from there.
Okay. And then, you know, we were roommates because we were old friends. And I actually was a second assistant for Lauren Holly, the actor Lauren Holly. And she was like, you know, if you have any TV show ideas for me, you know, let me know. So I went home and Liz and I came up with some show ideas. And kind of from then on, we have been writing partners.
And how many shows have you done together before Fantasy Island?
Oh, gosh. Many.
Well,
probably,
yeah.
I'd say, at least a dozen. And this is the third show that we've actually gotten on the air, but it's the first one that's made it to a season two, so that's very exciting. Our other two shows only lasted one season. That was Women's Murder Club and The Fix were the two other shows we got on the air. But, you know, we were really lucky because we had just really great mentors coming up who really taught us producing as well as the writing. Because, you know, one thing people don't realize is for TV writers, writing is really, you know, only one part of the job. Producing is a lot of what we do and how we spend our time. And that's definitely, you know, something you have to be sort of trained in.
You are hearing Elizabeth Kraft and Sarah Fain. They are the executive producers of Fantasy Island, starting season two with Rosalind Sanchez in the lead as the Rourke character on January 2nd, 8 p.m. East Pacific time on your local Fox station. And they're with us live from Los Angeles this half hour as we get a big two-hour pre-Christmas edition of Tomorrow Be Televised coming your way this Thursday afternoon. Simon Applebaum with you from the other side of the U.S. of A. That's Nueva York, where we are getting a lot of rain, and we're expecting a lot more between now and tomorrow afternoon. 42 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment on our remaining minutes with our duo, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. 2 weeks from today, we will have our first Thursday episode of Tomorrow Be Televised for 2023, and like this one, it will also be 2 hours. We already have half of our guest booked. In one of our first half hours, you'll meet the people behind Best Ever Channels. It's about to become a major new multi-channel bundle in 2023. It's a mix of both original channels and channels with acquired or library content. You'll meet Jonathan Bavaro, who is one of the co-chief executive officers of the program. And in our final half hour, we will have a terrific actress. I have enjoyed her career for years, both in film and on television. You may know her in film for her breakout role of opposite Julia Roberts in Mystic Pizza. You know her in television as being one of the people behind Gillian Anderson's successor on The X-Files on Fox, as well as the acclaimed Showtime series Brotherhood. I'm talking about Annabeth Gish, and she is one of the stars of the new AMC series Anne Rice Mayfair Witches, which is going to get a very unique premiere next month, and we'll tell you more about that in our news notes section. Annabeth Gish from Anna Rice's Mayfair Witches, who plays one of the Mayfairs, she'll be with us 2 weeks from today, right here, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern, noon 2 p.m. Pacific, on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Elizabeth, how has your show been a stepping stone for other women, for women of color, for people of color, in terms of writing, directing, other aspects of TV work?
Yeah, that's one of the things we love about this show is, you know, being women ourselves. Of course, we love to give as many women opportunities as we can, as well as, you know, people of color. And so we've had, so many of our directors have been women and people of color. We have one of our directors who's done a couple of episodes. Rachel Ramos is actually from Puerto Rico, so that was really fun. I don't know if you know, we shoot in Puerto Rico. And we have, you know, Puerto Rican editors, which has been really fun. We have our whole crew is from Puerto Rico. I mean, 99% of it. And then on the writing staff, too, of course, we have this great cast, this great diverse cast, and we need the writing, you know, to reflect the cast. So we've been able to find people who can have a really authentic voice. Of course, as writers, it's our job to write all kinds of people and, you know, women write men and men write women, et cetera, et cetera. But we've loved, you know, having those voices. I think really has added to kind of the depth of the show. And I think, you know, again, because Ricardo Montalban was such a voice of his community, it's great that, you know, we have Rosalind, who's very similar in that way. She's a huge voice for her community.
Sarah, have any of the writers or directors suggested plot lines that deal with unique culture, whether it's Native culture of Puerto Rico or Latino or Asian American or Native American kind of thing? You know, Native American culture has become a very big thing this year, this past year, with shows like Dark Winds on AMC and more recently Three Pines on Amazon Prime Video.
Yeah, actually, season one, we have an episode written by an Indian-American writer that is a fantasy about a woman who's trying to decide if she wants to have an arranged marriage or if she wants to marry her college boyfriend. And it's actually based in the writer's own experience with her roommate. So we really try to present stories that aren't just kind of, you know, the most I don't know, like, we don't want everyone on the show to look like us. So yes, we have a very diverse writing staff, and we like to, you know, express everyone's kind of cultural identity. We did a Day of the Dead episode in season one, and we will have more of that coming up in season two.
Yeah. For either of you, has anybody proposed a Christmas episode or Hanukkah episode or an episode dealing with holiday lore?
Well, season one, we had a two-part season finale, which was kind of a takeoff on a Hallmark holiday movie, where we played into all of those tropes, which was super fun. Season two, we don't have a holiday episode, but, you know, we're hoping to get a season three, and we would love to dive back into that. I think we all love, you know, holiday movies, and I think being on an island, it's kind of fun to play with, you know, what you think of as traditional holiday with the snow and the Christmas carolers and all of that, and then seeing that on a tropical island, the version of that is a lot of fun.
Oh, I actually just remembered we have a scene in season two where there's a ginormous Christmas tree on the beach.
Oh, yeah.
This woman is in the middle of her fantasy, and she walks down into this beautiful giant Christmas tree, which getting a huge Christmas tree to Puerto Rico on short notice is challenging with all the, like, decorations and stuff in the middle of the summer. So
yes.
But we did it, and it worked out really beautifully.
Yeah.
By the way, Sarah, do we get in season two to find out more about the island itself? I mean, beyond where Rourke operates. We never sort of got that, except in like a little bit here, a little bit there in the original Fantasy Island or in the Malcolm McDowell revival. I'm wondering if that's a possibility for season two, that we learn more about the island itself or the perimeters of the island, like the world beyond, if you will, where Rourke operates.
I'll say we learn more about how the island operates and some of the dynamics having to do with the island. We took some inspiration from the original, and we'll find out that the Rourke family has a bit of an antagonistic relationship with some other people who live, let's say, around the island. And we get to kind of delve into that story a little bit and find some history about, you know, Rourke and her family and maybe Mr. Rourke and some disagreements that he had. So, yes, we get to dive a little bit deeper into that in a really, really fun way.
Yeah. So for either of you, if you get a third season, is there a guest star that you have wanted to get on the first two seasons of Fantasy Island you are going to, you know, by hook or by crook, try to get for season three?
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy, that's a good question. I would love to get Tori Spelling because, you know, I'm a huge 90210 fan. I'm a huge Tori Spelling fan. And as you said, there is this connection with the show to Aaron Spelling. So I think it would be fantastic to have Tori Spelling guest star.
Mm. Tori, by the way, was on The Wheel last night, the new game show on NBC, going to night number four, by the way. And if you missed our interview with Michael McIntyre, the host, creator, and executive producer of the series, which comes from England, it's on NBC at 10 p.m. This week, all week long, then next Monday through Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern. Check out our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, or our podcast. I had to get that little plug in because of Tori being on last night. She was very good. And guess what her category was? 90210.
Oh, that makes sense.
Perfect.
Sarah, how about you? Who would you like to have as a guest star?
Oh, my gosh. I when I'm on the spot, I have no idea, actually. I think somebody in the musical world would be great. So I'll have to narrow that down.
We wanted to have Ricky Martin.
Yes, and Ron wants to have Ricky Martin. So
he would be good. Remember his General Hospital days and Menudo days? That would be. And you do have, by the way, a musical guest on one of your episodes this year, Marie Osmond.
Yes, she was so wonderful. She was definitely a dream person for us. We've been huge Marie Osmond fans since we were little. And she was every bit as lovely, you know, as you would want her to be. And she's so much fun in the episode. She did such a fantastic job. That's one of our favorite episodes.
And for everybody waiting for the possibility of Tori Spelling, there is a Beverly Hills 90210 co-star, former co-star, that you do have on this year.
Yes, Jason Priestley is in the finale, and it was such a dream to get him because, of course, we were huge 90210 fans as well. And, you know, those blue eyes, you just can't beat them. He's fantastic.
Season 2 of Fantasy Island begins on Monday, January 2nd, 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on your local Fox station. Check your local listings for where Fox Available is in your area. And don't forget that you can also catch reruns as well on Tubi, the Fox-owned multi-channel bundle available on smart TV sets, smart TV devices, and, of course, we mentioned multi-channel bundles. For more details about the show online, go to Fox.com. That's Fox.com. Fantasy Island Season 2, January 2nd, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on your local Fox station. Elizabeth Kraft, Sarah Fain, thank you both very, very much for kicking our big two-hour extravaganza off. It's been a pleasure to have both of you on. Have a wonderful holiday season with you, your cast and crew, and all the very best in 2023 and beyond.
Thank you, Simon.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
You're very, very welcome. Take care. All the greatest and then some.
You too.
Elizabeth Kraft and Sarah Fain from Fantasy Island joining us live from Los Angeles. When we come back, you're going to hear about the new TV set player in town. They're going to be making their mark in less than 2 weeks at CES 2023 in Las Vegas. The company is called Displace. Wait till you hear what kind of TV set they are making and where they want to go with it. We will talk to the founder and chief executive officer, Balaji Krishnan. He will join us live from right across the way from Apple in Cupertino, California, after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, and Tune.com, together reaching over 75 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you like a pre-Christmas treat, check out tonight's episode of the Hilltop Radio Show on BTR. It's on at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. That's the Hilltop Radio Show, special Christmas week edition. That's tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best to be charged 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our second half hour of our two-hour extravaganza this Thursday afternoon, live in Devo. On tomorrow, we'll be televised. Tom Abbott, I'm with you live from New York. Welcome to all of you just joining us at the bottom of the hour. We got more great guests coming away in the 90 minutes ahead, so stay tuned. Tell your friends. Have them tune in. Use our phone. Use our chat room, because we got some great to share with you. So if you have a question or comment for our guest ahead, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04. That's SimonApple04. You'll find that at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And coming up for the top of the hour, first of two chances to answer our classic trivia question of the week. We have two prizes in play, and they can be yours if you're the first emailing the correct answer. In less than 2 weeks, the big consumer electronics show of the year, CES 2023, will be happening in Las Vegas, in person and also digitally. And there will be a lot that the smart TV set makers and device makers are going to say at that event, which kicks off with a media day on January 4th and then continues through that weekend. We're going to introduce you to one of the new players that is going to be at CES for the first time. It's a TV set maker called Displace. And joining us live from Cupertino, California, in fact, his company's office is right across from where Apple has their big complex in that city, the founder and chief executive officer of Displace, Balaji Krishnan. Balaji, happy holiday season to you. Welcome to our program.
Hey, Simon. How's it going?
So, Balaji, what is Displace and how is it out to make its mark as a TV set?
Yeah, so Displace, we are making the world's first wireless TV. What I mean by wireless TV is this TV will have no wires, no ports, and it is going to be completely run with batteries, and we have our own proprietary multiple technologies that's built into it. But we have more than just wireless TVs run by batteries because this, this is going to be probably the newest type of TV that anyone would have seen, any time, because this was architected completely from scratch. It's built for people who want to actually have smart displays on their walls very easily, and that's the kind of world that we're envisioning.
Why is being wireless important? Why? What can this set do without having wires or without any ports? How does that serve the consumer?
Yeah. So if you think about television industry, I've actually done two startups before in the same TV space. But one thing that I noticed was the TVs, there was absolutely no innovation in the TV space except the display technology. We have been seeing 1080p to 4Ks to 8Ks, rolling display, folding displays. Everything is about display technologies, which is awesome, like led by LGs and Samsungs. But when it comes to TV sets, it is still a bulky like a unit that you buy, and the bigger you go, the heavier it becomes. And once you buy it, you put it in a spot, and it's not going to move. But that is good for certain areas in your homes, like living rooms. But if you really want to put a TV in your kitchen or in your kids' in a room or in your office room, today it's not actually easy because you need to find a power socket for that, and you need to find the right spot for it. And if you want to put it on the wall, it's even harder because the bigger you go, you need wall brackets, you need to bring a handyman. So for us, the wireless is the basic. The reason why we are doing wireless is because we are, you know, envisioning a world where people will be having multiple displays that stuck to the wall inside your homes. So wherever you go, there will be multiple displays of different sizes on the wall. And if you want that to happen, the TVs have to be changed completely from scratch. The first thing that you have to remove is the friction of having all these wires, so you don't have to worry about where to put this. This has happened in other industries like PCs and mobile phones. And if you think about PCs, it used to be a desktop computer and then became laptops. So that evolution happened in multiple industries, but TVs have not changed. And that is one of the things that we are trying to change here, where TVs should not be just seen as one bulky device sitting in one spot. We are seeing this to be more like a next-generation computing platform, if you will, where you have multiple smart displays stuck to the wall, and even sticking to the wall, a new technology to do that. So you don't need any wall brackets. You don't need any handyman coming to your home to, you know, stick the TV to the wall. So the basics of this is the wireless, where you don't, everything is run by batteries, and you know, like I said before, the whole architecture is changed in display TVs.
We are talking about the new TV set player Displace, and joining us live from Cupertino, California, across from where Apple has its Space Age-like headquarters, is the founder and chief executive officer of the organization, Balaji Krishnan. He joins us live this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised, and his company will be displaying its product for the very first time in less than 2 weeks at CES 2023 in Las Vegas. Simon App, I'm with you live from wherever you are. Thanks for joining us on the special two-hour edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. If you've just joined us, we have more and more great guests coming away in the less than 90 minutes ahead. And we invite you to get involved and be interactive with our guests right now. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. For those of you just joining us, in addition to Balaji, coming up in our next hour, as we kick off the top of the second hour, we will have one of the recent winners of the Catalyst TV Festival in Duluth, Minnesota. His name is Hans Abner. He is one of the major winners for his drama series pilot, A Question of Service. And then in our final half hour, we have an exclusive interview with Eric Garcia. He is the mastermind behind Netflix's first original scripted series of 2023. In fact, so original and so groundbreaking, it will premiere on New Year's Day. It's called Kaleidoscope. Wait till you hear what that's all about. Giancarlo Esposito is the star, and we'll talk to Eric about it. He will also join us live from California. That's in our final half hour. And if you have a question or comment for any of our guests, make that call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Balaji, there is no question that we are in a smart TV set world. That's how people are watching television. Smart TV sets have the functionality, the capability of having a lot of different channels. We're seeing multi-channel bundles come out. We are now seeing artificial intelligence built in to these sets and devices so that you can use your voice through Siri, Google Assistant, Alexa, other such devices, and artificial intelligence video also now is in play. We understand that the big guys like Samsung, LG, these are going to be dealing with as competitors. They have a lot of announcements coming up. We expect to hear more about game hubs, maybe about personal assistance on the TV set, telehealth, teleeducation, as well as the idea of using smart home functionality. At least that's what Samsung is saying. How smart is your product? You said before the break that it's going to be a next-generation computer platform. So how smart, how computer-like is Dispatch's set?
Yeah. So let's define smart TVs, because the smart TVs have been around for the past like few years. And when TVs say it's a smart TV, it's all software-based smartness. I would claim that no, they are not actually smart. They are just a different software that people use in the TVs, where you can actually get more content. And the smartness is actually built into certain areas where voice activations and all those things are a little smarter, but those are not actually coming from the TV makers. Those are coming from companies like Amazon's and Google's and Apple. To me, when you talk about smart TVs, I would prefer a TV that is smarter both on the hardware and software to remove user friction points. the biggest friction point people think of with the TVs is how do I watch certain show or movie on TV? But I always feel, by the way, you know, my previous two startups were actually, you know, trying to solve the problem, the exact problem of how to find a right show or right movie on the TV. But what I realized was whatever you do with the software, at the end of the day, the user interaction is a problem because you still are carrying this antiquated remote controls and you still are jumping tile by tile on the TV. And voice is great, but voice is going to be great if you know what you want. And it's not going to work all the time. You don't want to talk to the TV all the time. So the user interaction is the biggest problem when it comes to finding the right show or right, you know, right movie. And the second thing to me is the one that I talked about before is where do you want to put this TV? You know, do you want to actually be stuck in one room where you actually watch a TV? This is what people have been experiencing in the past, like, several decades. But for me, it has to change in a way that how, you know, phones have changed. Phones you carry, and the phones are actually delivering more than beyond what a telephone should be giving you as value, because it's now GPS, it's a camera, everything is built into it. So for that to happen, the hardware and software, there has to be an interplay between hardware and software, and both have to change, and both have to become smarter. And that's what we are doing at this place. So we have significant innovation in hardware, and we have significant innovation in software. When it comes to software, the biggest thing that we are trying to solve here is user interactivity. So, of course, we have touch, we have voice. But the one thing that we are introducing with Display TV is hand gestures. So you would be interacting with these TVs using hand gestures. It's almost like a Minority Report-like interaction.
And how do you put the hand gestures, how is that able to work? Is it through some form of artificial intelligence? Is it through new technology that you've dreamed up?
Yeah, so we have a camera built into the TV, and of course for privacy, for privacy reasons, you could always push the camera down, and then you would be able to use other interactions. So if you have the camera up, then we have our own machine learning software that we built to basically use hand gestures to control your TV. So, let me give you like really high level five pillars that I think is are the core innovations that we have done in Display TV. One is, like I said, it's completely wireless, no wires, no ports. It's run on batteries. Mm-hmm. But even batteries, we have a proprietary battery assembly system where we have four batteries per 55-inch OLED display TV, and these four batteries are hot swappable. What it means is you could actually remove, pop in and pop out each battery. Mm-hmm. So even if you remove one battery, the TV will still be functional. So we wanted to make it more modularized so you don't have to basically carry this huge battery that you have, you know, you need for the TV to function. That said, on an average of 6 hours per day viewing time, these four batteries can actually run for entire month. You don't have to change the batteries for the entire month. So that's number one. Number two is we have made it in such a way that the 55-inch TV is going to be less than 20 pounds. So we made it so light that you could actually pick it up. You could stick to any wall, including drywall. So we have created this new technology called active loop vacuum technology. So it's an interplay of software and hardware. So you could simply take the TV, bring it near the wall, and with a slight automatically stick to the wall. And of course, we have everything that we have the secondary measures to make sure that the TV will not fall even if the battery dies, because we have something called airbags, which we can talk later. But that's number two. You can pick it up, stick to the wall very easily. Number three is we are introducing 55-inch, but you could put multiple 55-inch TVs together to form any size TV. So at CES, we are going to be demonstrating a 110-inch 8K TV by putting four TVs together. So that's what we're going to be demonstrating at CES. So you could actually pretty much make any size TV. For example, if you have a backyard party, you can actually put together like a 220-inch 16K TV with 16 55-inch TVs, and then break it down after the party and then put all these TVs wherever you want. And then the fourth one is, like I said, it's hand gestures. The fifth one is my favorite. I watch in a sport. And if I'm watching some game in my bedroom, and if I want to go to my kitchen to get my coffee, I usually take my laptop or my iPad with me so that I don't miss the game. But in our case, we have created this proprietary computer vision technology where you walk from bedroom to kitchen, it will know its assignment, and it will automatically switch what you're watching in the bedroom to the kitchen TV. So these are the five core pillars that I would consider as an interplay of hardware and software innovation that we've done.
The reason I'm sort of focusing on functionality and how functionality will the set be is because it seems that we are in an era now where these sets and these devices, I'm also including Roku, Apple TV, set-top, et cetera, they are providing more and more options for viewers. The option, for example, to do interactive fitness classes like Apple Fitness Plus or Beachbody or Peloton. We had the announcement yesterday that Netflix is going to experiment with Nike workout videos. They're not interactive. We can interact with the trainer live through the TV set, but that may be the next step if this project works between Netflix and Nike. You now have telehealth, the opportunity to talk to doctors or to an artificial intelligence video-created concierge, if you will, to deal with various health issues. We are now seeing video games being played on the television set, either using your voice, using gestures, or using a joystick that is pointed directly at the set. We think, as I said, that we're going to see smart home functionality, the ability to interact with other smart home appliances and so forth through the TV set, making it a hub. And we think this and next year could be the breakout year for interactive programming. Fallon, which is the investment Mark Cuban has made in interactive programming, it's going to go on various television sets next year. So the question really is, you know, how flexible is your set so that you can, you know, incorporate any of these ventures become, you know, mass culture, you can incorporate these features, these functionality into your product.
Yeah, that's a good point because you actually brought up a lot of good points here. The interactivity is going to be the future. And the telehealth, so the futuristic functionalities that you just described, it requires hardware and software interplay. So the answer to your question is, that is the platform that we are creating. So we don't have to create all those applications ourselves, but we will actually be opening up our platform for developers that will be actually providing these kind of functionalities. But because our TV is going to be having all kinds of sensors built into it, and then we will also be providing the software that will be interplaying with those sensors. And now you're opening up to other developers that will be creating applications that you can't even actually imagine now. So this is exactly what happened with smartphones.
Just to interrupt for a second, but just to be clear for our audience, you're going to be creating this set is going to have an operating system that will allow third-party application developers to develop the apps for you.
Exactly. Because all these content publishers like Netflix and Disney Plus, you know, they all want this interactivity. But how people interact with these content on the TV set is really hard today. You will be able to interact with this content with your smartphones, iPads, laptops very easily. That's why Netflix, you know, interactivity, the Black Mirror, not Black Mirror, the Stranger Things, you know, when they introduced that interactivity, they were actually launching only on iPhones and iPads initially. So the interactivity is what is key for even telehealth. How do you measure your blood pressure, or you know, how do you do all those things? So exactly. So our operating system interplay with the hardware that we're building, which will be having multiple sensors, which will be providing these kind of hooks for developers to be plugging in their innovation into the hardware.
Balaji Krishnan, the founder and chief executive of Displace, the new TV set maker, is our guest this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. He's in Cupertino, California, and I'm in New York. Simon Abbott, I'm with you live on this Thursday afternoon. If a question or comment on our remaining minutes with Balaji, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Don't forget, near the top of the hour, our first of two chances to answer our classic trivia question that we're currently posing. And if you're first to direct answer, we have two prizes in play for you to get it in by email first. Tomorrow on Tomorrow Be Televised, our lead guest will be from Media Village, the popular columnist and video host, Juan Ayala. We'll talk to him about his picks for the best and worst television of the year, the state of multicultural TV, And we'll also get his thoughts about how everything's going to be going in 2023. And next Monday at our regular time, 3 Eastern Pacific, among our features, we will have our annual retrospective. Tomorrow will be televised, Remembers, where we pay tribute to the people in front of and behind the TV camera who passed away this year. And it is a very long line, both departments. So be sure to join us for our annual Tomorrow Will Be Televised Remembers feature. That's Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Balaji, what is the game plan for bringing this set to the market? You're going to, at CES, are you just going to be an exhibitor? Are you going to do a press conference? And then once you get yourself known there in less than 2 weeks, when can people place orders for the set, and when will the set finally be made available?
So during CES, we are going to be opening up for reservations. It's a fully refundable, you put a small deposit, and then you can reserve your spot. And we are planning to make 2,000 to 3,000 units next year. So by end of next year, we will be shipping to the market, and we'll ship it to the customers. So if people want the first 1,000 to 2,000, then they can actually reserve during CES. And we have special prices as well, which we will be announcing during CES. We are very competitive in terms of price when it comes to high-end TVs. That's a plan. During CES, we are going to be showing the TV for the first time, and then we'll take reservations, and then we'll be shipping end of next year.
And what are you looking at as a price?
We will be announcing the price, during CES, and we are going to be doing one pack, two pack, and four pack. I forgot to mention the displays TVs. All these TVs will be wirelessly communicating with the base unit. So the base unit is what is almost like a computer that you can actually put in your closet, and that has to be plugged into the wall for power. And all these TVs will be wirelessly communicating. So one pack will have one TV with one base unit, two pack will have two TVs with one base unit, and four pack is four TVs and one base unit. And the price point is going to be around $3,000 for one pack, and then of course we'll be giving discounts when you buy two pack and four pack.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of response are you getting to the idea of application developers? What are they saying about what you're doing, and how enthused are they about hooking up with you?
Well, we're still early, and in terms of applications, we are going to be creating our own application. The good news is we are not actually Android-based, and we are Linux-based operating system. So, and we have a mix of application and browser-based applications. So when you go browser-based applications, you could pretty much bring any kind of website onto the TV. But you're not going to be typing in the URL, and we will create the better UI for that. But in terms of talking to developers, we are still early on that one. So we have been talking to a few developers, but again, like I said, probably by mid next year is when we are trying to engage with developers.
Mm-hmm. Also, how are you being financed? And are there any plans to raise additional money either through crowdfunding or NFTs or other means?
No crowdfunding and no NFTs. I have been self-funding the company, we are looking to raise capital from strategic or institutional investors right after CES.
Mm-hmm. And how did you get into this position, by the way, to start this place? What's been your sort of road to now?
Yeah, so I have done a couple of startups before. My first company was called Snapstick, which was acquired. We were the first company to do mobile to TV, and we actually won the best of CES when we went on 2010, and we won the best of CES in 2010. Oh, sorry, 2011 actually. So we got acquired soon after the CES, best of show. And then after that, I started another company called Dabkick, where we introduced the first smart streaming device. And it was called Dabby, and we debuted that device in 2020, right before COVID, during CES. And we won the best of CES again, 2020. So, and this has been more, I would say, like a holy grail of what I really wanted to do in terms of both companies. We actually created a box that connects to the TV. So one thing that I realized was whatever you create, whatever innovation that you bring, at the end of the day, the TV is what is controlling the user experience. You have to, if the TV user experience sucks, then doesn't matter what you actually provide. So Roku's, Apple TVs, Chromecast, all these things are, I would say, it's temporary because everything is going to go away in the future. Everything is going to be built into one unit, whether it's a displaced TV or some other TV, we'll see. But all these other accessory devices should go away because we want minimal number of devices, not multiple devices connecting to the TVs.
New TV set maker Displace will be one of the many startups that will be showcasing themselves for the first time in less than 2 weeks at CES 2023 in Las Vegas. And we'll certainly be following the television action there for this program, for Media Village, and other places as well. If you want more details about this new venture, here's where you go, displace.tv. That's Displace, D-I-S-P-L-A-C-E. TV, and we'll keep you posted throughout the year as to how this goes. Balaji Krishnan, the head of Displace, thank you again for joining us prior to CES. Have a wonderful holiday season, a great time in Las Vegas. We would love to have you back around the time that your sets are going to be available in the open marketplace.
Thank you, Simon. Happy holidays, and thanks for having me.
You too, very much. Have a wonderful CES 2023 in Vegas in a couple of weeks.
Thank you. All right, bye.
Take care. Balaji Krishnan, founder, chief executive officer of Displace, joining us live from Cupertino, California, not far, in fact, across the way from where Apple's big space age headquarters is. And we will keep you posted about how Displace is doing at CES and way beyond. Now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. We introduced our latest question on Monday's program. If you are first with the correct answer, we got two prizes for you. Taylor Swift's wonderful CD, Speak Now, one of her classics, and the best-selling book by one of our former guests over the last month, and that is, of course, the book called My Own Direction. That is a man's journey, a black man's journey in the American theater, and that is by the person who is doing the BET Plus movie Christmas Party Crashers. That is, of course, Sheldon Epps. He, by the way, this Friday will have that film simulcast in primetime on BET and BET Her. Here is the question. On The Walking Dead, Rick Grimes was the sheriff of what location? On The Walking Dead, Rick Grimes, that's one of the key characters for the duration of the series, was sheriff of what location? And we need the exact location and the state. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please include your name and where you're emailing from. Once again, here's the question. On The Walking Dead, Rick Grimes was sheriff of what location? Our Taylor Swift CD and the book, My Own Directions, can be yours if you are first emailing the correct answer, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget, when you email, enclose your name and your mailing address so we get the prize out to you as soon as possible. If we don't get a winner by the end today, we'll post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to play in. So do so, and of course, all the very best. This is Tamavi Televised. We are wrapping up hour one of our two-hour Thursday Jamboree. Happy to have you aboard. Stick around for the next hour. We got some great guests coming your way. In our next half hour, we will have news notes, including the big story of the day, YouTube picking up NFL Sunday tickets, and then we'll have Hans Abma. He is one of the big winners of the Catalyst TV Festival early this fall in Duluth, Minnesota, and he has a pilot that very well might become a series. It's called A Question of Service. And in addition to the Catalyst Awards, also been featured at a number of film festivals and won some awards there too. So Hans will join us in our next half hour. And finally, in our final half hour, bottom of the hour, we will be going back to California and we will be speaking with Eric Garcia. He is the creator, writer, executive producer, and showrunner of Netflix's first original scripted series of 2023, Kaleidoscope. It is an example of non-linear storytelling. Wait till you hear how this goes. And I think you'll agree, it's one of the most unique experiments that we've had in television, scripted TV, in a long time. Called Kaleidoscope, premieres on New Year's Day. That's all coming up in our hour ahead. And we will get into that hour after we pause at the top of this hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, and TuneIn.com, together reaching over 75 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, BTR is your home for Trek Talking. It's the Star Trek podcast, and they've got a great Christmas episode for you today at 7:30 p.m. Eastern 4:30 p.m. Pacific. Trek Talking, the Star Trek podcast, right here, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 4:30 p.m. Pacific, today and tonight, here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best be charged 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our second hour of Tomorrow Be Televised on this special Thursday afternoon, the eve before Christmas Eve. And welcome those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Sam Abbott, I'm with you live from Nueva York. 42 degrees at the top of the hour. We've got rain happening here in not only the New York metro area, but also in Philadelphia, Washington, D.C. We've got blizzard conditions in Chicago, Detroit, other places around the Midwest. And we got cold air supposed to hit us starting on the weekend. So lots happening in the weather department. If you're going out, by the way, to spend Christmas weekend with members of your family and friends, please take extra time, depending on your travel mode, and don't forget to contact your carrier, especially if you're going by plane or by rail, because a lot of flights and some trains have been canceled because of the crazy weather going on all over the country, including the bomb cyclone in the Midwest. So we have some wonderful guests for you in the hour ahead. Stick with us. Tell your friends to tune in and be part of our program. Give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere. You're catching us across the country, around the globe. You're on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. And if you're shy about the phone, no problem. Use our chat room. It's ready for you right now. It's SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Become the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Screen. Follow the instructions of Doobie Live with you. Hans Abner from the Catalyst TV Festival winning pilot, A Question of Service, will join us live after these news notes. NFL Sunday Ticket will move from DirecTV to YouTube next season. YouTube sealed the deal for the out-of-market subscription package of regular season NFL football games this morning, reportedly paying $2 billion a year for the rights. Apple was rumored to get Sunday Ticket early this year and walked away from a deal. Under this multi-year arrangement, YouTube will offer Sunday Ticket to customers in two ways, via YouTube television or YouTube's primetime channels format. The cost each way will be reached later and be revealed later. DirecTV subs now pay $294 a year for Subway Ticket or $396 for a three-channel bundle of Ticket, NFL Red Zone, and a fantasy football destination. There will be more details to come. I am absolutely sure about that. Question. Will Greg Berlanti continue to make TV series exclusively through Warner Brothers? Reports this morning claim Warner Brothers Discovery, that's the parent of Warner Brothers, wants that result and is already discussing an extension of his latest current WB pact, which expires at the end of 2024. That deal is worth $400 million. Meantime, Berlanti's production complex is working on a 23 new series lineup. The coming new attractions include Green Lantern and Dead Boy Detectives at HBO Max, Gotham Knights for the CW, and long-planned Netflix series, The Girls on the Bus. Now going public and awaiting a service to run on, a Doris Day bio miniseries, and book adaptation, Anon PIs. Now quickies, about 3.8 million people saw Mariah Carey's live concert special Tuesday night from Madison Square Garden on CBS or Paramount+. Hallmark Movies now has picked up a distribution deal with Vizio Smart TV sets. True TV will program 3 days of Hanging with Mr. Cooper episode marathons starting tomorrow night. The following Friday night, True TV will do the same for Step by Step episode. That's the show with Suzanne Summers as one of the co-stars. And Anne Rice's Mayfair Witches opening episode will get a five-channel simulcast January 8th. AMC, AMC Plus, IFC, Sundance TV, and BBC America will participate. And 2 weeks from today on this program, our final guest on another two-hour edition will be Annabeth Gift, one of the co-stars of Anne Rice's Mayfair Witches. She plays one of the Mayfairs. And that is coming up, again, 2 weeks from today. That's January 5th, another Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here exclusively on Tomorrow Be Televised. And that is news notes for today. And now joining us live, one of the big winners of the Catalyst TV Festival earlier this fall in Duluth, Minnesota, Hans Abner. Hans, happy holidays to you.
Thanks so much. Happy holidays to you, Simon. How you doing?
Very, very fine, thank you. And Hans, where are you calling us from? What city?
I'm calling from beautiful Green Bay, Wisconsin, of all places.
The home of the Packers, of course.
True story, yeah.
Who had the big win on Monday night, and they're still alive for the playoffs for that seventh, that last wild card spot. We will see with 3 weeks to go. And, of course, the first game of week 16 starts tonight on Prime Video. In the meantime, talk about your pilot, A Question of Service. It has done very well at Catalyst, but it's not the only place that your pilot has done well at.
Yeah, thank you for asking. It's been an exciting last 6 months or so. We started off winning at Holly Shorts Film Festival in L.A., which was out of nowhere. So I would actually say Catalyst has been my favorite festival experience, but there's been some others as well. So we just were at Austin Film Festival down in Austin, Texas, and we've also won Best TV at the International Film Festival of Wales in the U.K.
And at Catalyst, you won 4 awards, Best Drama Series, Best Drama Actor, Best Pitch, and Best Cinematography. How'd you come
this
up with
true.
The idea
yes.
of a question? Go ahead.
Well, I mean, so the idea came, it was the beautiful result of the pandemic for me. So I don't wish the pandemic on anyone. There were horrible aspects of everything. But had it not happened, this idea would not have come to me. So I play foreign characters on TV. I play Russians, Germans, French people. And when lockdown hit, I began practicing languages and accents all day, every day. At the same time, I read this book by Julia Cameron called The Artist's Way. And about week 4, I had an idea for a script. And I thought, man, if I could play anything, I'd be James Bond's interpreter. And so that's what I wrote and shot.
Mm-hmm. And how much of it is based on your own work as an interpreter or doing roles which require you to do other languages?
Hang on just one moment. I'm having a bit of an interference here. It'll be just a second. I'll be with you in just a second. My apologies. There's kind of a lot going
on. Okay, Hans, no problem.
Right back here.
That's Hans Abner. And again, his pilot is A Question of Service. It won 4 awards at the recent Catalyst TV Festival in Duluth, Minnesota. Incidentally, last week on our program, we had another one, actually 2 of the other winners for the same pilot called Sugar Babies. And incidentally, that episode has turned out to be one of our biggest replayed episodes in quite some time. We have had, going into today, over 300 replays of that episode. And if you haven't heard it, you can go ahead and do so at blogtalkradio.com/televised. Go to our podcast site, as well as our website, tomorrowbetelevised.podium.com. Hans, you back with us.
I am back with you, Simon, and I also wanted to say I love Sugar Baby. The cast, the creators are lovely, and I really enjoy their work.
Mm-hmm. And we had a great time having them on the program, and it looks like they're looking at – and they not only did a pilot, they did 2 other episodes of that series, and they're now trying to see if they can turn it into a series somewhere.
Yeah, they're really bright people. They're skilled, they're talented, and I mean, they're the kind of people I would put money on doing well. Anyway, you asked me about how much of my project is based on my personal experience, and significantly so. So I did used to be an interpreter. I was not an interpreter for James Bond, but an interpreter. And languages have been a huge deal in my life. It's where all of my work has been booked, and it has been my, I mean, kind of the crux of my international experience as well.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever see the TV series MI5? Which I understand was also called Snoops in England, which had a nice run on A&E a number of way back.
So I have access to it, but I have not watched it. I think the lead actress is just lovely, though.
Because when I read the log line of your pilot, it reminded me a lot of MI5 in that very clandestine and very much dealing with the inner workings of an agency like that.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent comparison. If I were to draw a contrast, it's that actually the religious conflict of one of the characters is pretty central to this project. So it is as though a person who has a rather complex inner life and even a significant kind of inner religious conflict is at MI6, is a flavor that is a bit different from anything that I've seen so far in the MI6 genre. And I love the MI6 genre, in fact.
So explain the plot of your pilot and the road to putting it together.
Yeah, so A Question of Service is the story of a conflicted missionary. So that's where the religious conflict comes in. He jilts his fiancée, and he unwittingly lands an interpreting job at MI6. Then everything there becomes increasingly complex because there's things going on that are stronger than he himself is. So it's as though a regular mortal human being is thrust into the world of the apparent superhumans of James Bond. And that's, well, on one hand, I really enjoy British things, and so that led me in that direction. But the experience of him among the agents is not unlike my own experience as an actor, because of what my headshot looks like, I audition against people who I internally am so utterly different from. And this is an opportunity to explore that. I mean, meaning when I audition for things that are, I mean, crime shows or whatever, espionage things in L.A., these people seem to kind of identify with their characters, and that's just so different from them. And so I thought it'd be good to create a character that was more similar to myself.
What shows did you audition for, and how did the audition, either the audition process or the way the show happened, did any of that factor into the plot?
I mean, so that's a great question. So probably the thing that would be a pretty direct comparison to what I was talking about is I did an episode of NCIS New Orleans, and it was fun. It was good. I liked it. But the characters on that show tend to be kind of perfect in a way that I just don't relate to. And so according to what I mean by that is when I've auditioned for things such as NCIS, well, I just, like, even the flaws the characters have seem to be almost desirable. It's just how things are in a lot of things. So for this project, I decided I would have a character who is just much more familiar with things that he doesn't want to talk about because he feels shameful about them. It's meant to be a truly human show, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So given the coronavirus pandemic that you were dealing with, what kind of challenge did you have to assemble a cast, assemble a crew, and get this thing made?
Well, we get to a place where there was a, kind of some serendipitous realities that came with the pandemic, because the first draft I wrote of this project would have cost a couple of million dollars to make. However, because the pandemic hit, it became, well, how could we shoot this in a way that, I mean, that doesn't violate COVID rules? And it became, well, let us create the basement of MI6 on a soundstage. So our production designer is phenomenal. He got nominated for an Emmy for his work on Modern Family. He worked significantly on the new League of Their Own show, and he just happened to be a friend of a friend, and he agreed to do the project with me. And so he created the basement of MI6 on the soundstage in LA, and then the other part was we decided we'd shoot the beginning on the south coast of England, which presented some of its own difficulties because in England, I wanted to head to Wales, where I actually had set the project, but I couldn't cross the border. I was just not allowed to cross the border because it was right when the Omicron virus was getting crazy. Again, had COVID not happened, this project, we wouldn't have been able to shoot what we shot, and I wouldn't have had the idea to shoot in this one room with this one character interacting with everybody else off screen.
We are speaking with Hans Abner. He is the person behind the Catalyst TV Festival winning pilot, A Question of Service. He's also won other awards at other film and TV festivals. He joins us live from Green Bay, Wisconsin, home of the Packers, still alive for an NFC wildcard spot. And he joins us live this half hour on this special Thursday edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. 2-hour jamboree, now in our second hour. Simon Abner with you live from New York. Thanks for joining us wherever you may be. 42 degrees at the top of the hour here in the Big Apple. If you have a question or comment for Hans, make that call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We're back tomorrow at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. Joining us will be one of the top new columnists and video hosts at Media Village, the media leadership website which I write for, Juan Ayala. We're talking about his picks for the best and worst television of this year. We'll get his thoughts about the state of multicultural television and where he sees the medium going in 2023. That's all coming up on Friday, tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, exclusively here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Hans, in terms of the shoot, the schedule of the shoot,
yes.
What was it like to pull this together and pull the plots together? And by the way, were you like a jack of all trades here, writer, director, you know, everything else?
So I'm the creator, writer, and lead actor, and then we could call me the casting director. So The way that the casting came together was during lockdown, I participated in a weekly reading of plays with a group of actors based in London. And we became friends, and I really respected the work that they did. So I was able to hire an all-British cast to act with, which was essential to the believability of the project. And I have a fantastic director named Aaron Brown Thomas, and so I did not direct. And then I have a producer named El Shaw, another producer named Gabriel Fernandez, who did excellent work. So I had a team that helped me in many ways. But yes, I am creator, writer, and lead actor. And when I say lead actor, I'm, well, for 95% of the project, the only person that you see in this. Although, in the hour-long version, it'll be a wide cast. Everybody will be on screen. It won't be just me. There's no more pandemic going on.
For you, what was the toughest part about the casting process and then later the production process in terms of getting the pilot made?
So the hardest person to cast in the project was probably one of the MI6 leaders named is Benjamin Serrano. The feel of this character is a really big deal. He's got to have a lot of stature, and we auditioned plenty of people for that role. The blessing, though, of having worked with a group of actors in the UK was I was even able to have some of them in mind as I wrote it. So the casting was very easy. And each person that I asked to do those roles that I had written for them was delighted to do it. So that was very helpful. In terms of production, I'd say the post-production process was simply a labor of consistency, because people that agreed to work on the project with me, they liked the script and were, but then in the long process of post-production, continuing to believe in it is a little hard, because once you shot it, it was another year before we won things. And then people were like, oh, I'm so glad I did this, because we're winning things now. Up until then, you just don't know if it's going to be very good or not, if that makes sense.
What were you looking for in terms of the style or the look of your pilot?
Great
question. I
asked
this because, for example, you mentioned you had an all-British cast, and, of course, British television for many, many decades has been known for the way they do a adventure, spy, espionage kind of show, whether it's The Saint or The Avengers or Man in the Suitcase or The Baron. They just seem to have a secret agent. They used to, many shows like The Prisoner, they have these shows that have a great production look, a great style, et cetera, et cetera.
So, I mean, the heaviest influences for the way that it looks came, first of all, from a couple of things that are, I mean, James Bond stuff. It's not exactly a James Bond project, but I was heavily influenced by Skyfall. I love Skyfall. I think it's a fantastic movie. I was also heavily influenced by the John le Carré book, so Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy being the best-known one. I read several of his novels in preparation. Finally, I would actually say the show Bodyguard is just fantastic. And while wouldn't say that I copied that show, I really esteemed it, and so it probably did influence some things along the way. It's because it's so personal, that show. And it is sleek in a way that is exactly as sleek as it should be. It's not quite James Bond in the sense that it's not like super sleek, but it's just right, the show Bodyguard. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that show, but it's really very well done.
Yeah. Hans, I believe we have a call, and we're going to take it. Hello, you're on Kumar. We'll be televised. What's your name, and where are you calling from? Go ahead. You're on the air. Hello? Hold on for 1 second. Let's see if we can get this person back on.
Sure.
Just joined us. Let's try it one more time. Hello, you're on Kumar. Be televised. What's your name and where are you calling from? Hello, you're on the air. Okay. Kristen didn't want to say anything, but thanks for tuning in. And stay tuned. If you want to give us a call again, do so, and we'll get that in. I'm also wondering, and again, this is looking at the log line, that The Equalizer, the original series with Edward Woodward, was also an influence. And I'm wondering also about the music, because one of the great things about a lot of British television shows and about The Equalizer is the music is the original composing by people like Ed Asley, Laurie Johnson, for the Avengers, Ed Asley for the Saint, many other ITC shows, and of course with Equalizer, that brilliant score by Stuart Copeland.
Yeah, so actually, but funnily enough, I do not know the Equalizer. I'm less aware of certain excellent pop culture things than some people. I tend toward watching British things, but I'm not on top of the Equalizer. I'd love to hear what do you enjoy about Equalizer? I know you mentioned the score. I don't know the Equalizer.
Well, I was a big fan of the series. I had the chance to meet Edward Woodward, the star, who also did a great spy show called Callan for British television before the Equalizer. Wonderful actor. Should have won the Emmy Award, but did win the Golden Globe. Jim McGann, the executive producer, I also had a chance to meet. A very underrated talent in television for Universal TV for many, many years. And I love that score by Stu. And I love the style of the show, the fact it was done in New York. It was very, very New York-y in terms of, you know, everyone
yes.
being on the streets. It really made an impact. And the thing, too, which is why I was sort of contrasting it with your character, is because as time went on, it became more of a character study than a spy drama. We got to see his character strip away various layers. And it sounds like with your character does the same thing, that being part of this secret clandestine agency that in time, and this was also the same thing with Petra Wilson in La Femme Nikita, that series on USA for a number of years, her character strips away. You get more and more layers open like a scab wound,
So honestly, I think you've convinced me that I should be watching The Equalizer, because that would be an excellent reference point. So yes, as much as there is significant, I'd say, adventure and plot to explore within this project, the personal part is always the most important, really and truly. Which, I mean, as I have kind of been talking with other creators of things and with people who've done far more than I have at this point, they consistently say that it is the deeply personal thing that keeps people coming back. So when I was at Austin Film Festival just now, one of the coolest filmmakers there was Darren Aronofsky, and Darren was talking about how a thing becomes universal, or his words were international. And he said the way that something becomes international is you tell the truth and you tell it as specifically as possible. Tell your truth as specifically as possible, and I'm endeavoring to do that with this project. And I wonder if they do that with The Equalizer too.
In a moment, we're going to find out what the future of A Question of Service is as a television series. We've got the creator and writer of that program, Hans Obna, award winner at the Catalyst TV Festival earlier this fall in Duluth, Minnesota, and other places too. He's with us for a few more minutes, live from Green Bay, Wisconsin, the home of the Packers. Simon Abba with you live from Nueva York, 42 degrees at the top of the hour. You have A Question of Power in many minutes with Hans. Give us a call, 646-652-2904. Use our chat room. Simon Apple 04 by name. So with all the awards you've gotten so far, what is the future of the pilot, A Question of Service? Are we going to see it as a series, and if so, where?
Great. Well, before going into that, I would love to kind of speak briefly about Catalyst, because you've mentioned Catalyst a couple of times, and I'm so thankful for my whole experience at Catalyst. So if anybody here has a project that they think should become a television series, I thoroughly recommend submitting it to Catalyst Content Festival. Catalyst welcomes people who have written a project, who have shot a project, even who have an idea simply that they want to pitch a project. And there are many well-connected people there that a person can meet. And I can't overemphasize that it is the Catalyst Content Festival exists to help people advance their projects. So in terms of where we are going, so my intention and my representatives and I are talking about different producers to pursue. So we think probably the way this will go, we'll be coming to an agreement with either a European or an English production company. And ideally this will shoot in the UK simply because there's significantly Welsh themes. So I may have already mentioned that my grandmother is from the UK. The character is a Welsh-speaking character, which adds a specific kind of flavor, and that would basically have to be in the UK. Now, we're talking about different producers in the US to talk with as well, and I'm open to those ideas, and that would, there's a different, exciting way to look at that. But so far, we're looking at the UK and shooting in the UK and producers over that way, if that makes sense.
As you know, there are a number of mega content services that are now featuring British products. There's BritBox. There's now ITVN. That's the new service from ITV Studios, ITV Network in England. You also have Acorn TV, which is from AMC Networks. Service features, and of course, BBC America too. Are any of them in the hunt to possibly take on the series?
What an excellent question. Well, I'll begin by saying that BritBox, I really, really enjoy. And probably the series that I'm most excited to see in the next couple of years is coming from BritBox. I'm not sure if you've heard discussion yet of a new project called A Spy Among Friends, based on this phenomenally true story about Kim Philby, one of the Cambridge Five spies from back in the 50s and 60s. And actually reading that book, again, was an influence on this project. So I'm not able to divulge who we're talking with or who we intend to talk with, but I will say I'm familiar with each of those players. And, I mean, certainly things like BritBox will be going through my mind because I think there's some exciting things that they'll be doing going ahead. And it'll also be – it'll depend on existing relationships that my representation have and that I have. And we're playing every card that's available to us, I'll say.
Yeah. Is there a network that you would really like to be on, whether it's Netflix or Amazon, Prime Video or Freevee or Hulu, or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that you'd like to have either as a co-producer or co-distributor?
Yeah, I mean, so that's an excellent question. So I've always thought of it as being a streaming series. So I've always said off the top of my head, I've said Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime, I've said all of those things. In terms of networks, I tell you what, I would also be delighted to work with, I mean, I don't know how familiar you are with Orphan Black, which was on BBC America, and I loved that show. And they, I mean, I don't know all the things that BBC America does, but they really do create some unexpected things, which would be exciting to be kind of part of that roster, if that makes sense.
We are very familiar with Orphan Black. I had the opportunity when they won the Peabody Award that I've shown to meet the creators, Graham and John. Graham, of course, later on has done Snowpiercer, which just wrapped up last year. It's final season on TNT. We've had both of them on, and we had both of them on this program during the run of Orphan Black, and Graham also with Snowpiercer on TNT. And, of course, you should know that Orphan Black, the sequel, is now being developed for AMC Networks and hopes to go on the air this year. Orphan Black Echoes.
Wow.
In 2023, I should say.
Oh, very good. So I will offer. I'm an AMC alum. I've worked on a handful of AMC shows. I love AMC Network. I mean, the pursuit of excellence. Anytime a person is on an AMC set, is enormous. So I'd be delighted to work with some AMC folks. I'll also say I am loving a lot of things coming out on the Apple platform currently. Again, pursuit of excellence to me means so much, and I see, again, my personal experience of that is with AMC, and I have some experience working with Apple, but I just more by reputation know that Apple does really cool stuff too.
Yeah. Although Apple has done very well with a show called Slow Horses with Gary Oldman. James Yu is the original director and executive producer of the first season. Second season, I believe, is now running on Apple, and it's been renewed for at least two more. And it's doing very well in that service. That's a wonderful, and it's also a spy show that has its own flavor and distinct character.
Yeah, I mean, and is pretty darn similar to a modern day John le Carré something or other. I've not watched the whole of that yet, but definitely a John le Carré influence show, which I relate to. Yeah.
Again, the name of the pilot is A Question of Service. By the way, are there any plans to have this being seen at other film and TV festivals early next year?
Yes. So let me think. We will be at Santa Monica Film Festival in Santa Monica, California, coming up soon. There's a couple of other ones that we are in talks with that it'd be really exciting I can't speak to because we're still talking with them about it, but it'd be cool. Oh, also, wonderfully, I'm at the Flathead Lake International Cinema Fest in Montana. I have family in Montana, and I was longing to be at a festival in Montana, and I've just come to an agreement with them that recently we'll be at the Flathead Lake International Cinema Fest in Flathead Lake, Montana. So those are the two right now that we're kind of heading toward pretty soon.
And way to go with all the film festivals that are now expanding to showcase TV series pilots. It's been a great showcase. It's been like Dance with Films in L.A. and other places, too, that are doing it, South by Southwest. Et cetera, et cetera. And if you want to know more about the Catalyst TV Festival, which will be expanding, incidentally, with activities not just in Duluth, Minnesota, but elsewhere around the country, including, I believe, here in New York, here's where you go online, CatalystStories.com. It's CatalystStories, all one phrase, .com. And we'll keep you posted, by the way, if any other festival winners or pilots that were shown there become series. And we'll invite those people to come on our program. Incidentally, one of the other Catalyst Bill Westwoods was Race Nig, who is doing a show in conjunction with Entertainment. That is the funding mechanism to get new TV series and other things on the air. Race is in Israel this week. Unfortunately, we could not swing it so that she could be on our show this week, but we are going to keep an eye on her pilot, and as soon as it becomes a series, we will have her on as well. Hans Abner, thank you so much for coming on. Congratulations on the big success at Catalyst and other places with a question of service, and we'd love to have you back on when it becomes a series.
Thanks, Simon. Let's stay in touch. Good talking with you.
Will do. Happy holiday season. A great, great Super 2023 to you.
Happy holidays. Peace.
Hans Abner joining us live from Green Bay, Wisconsin, the home of the Packers. When we come back, joining us will be the mastermind of Netflix's first original scripted series of 2023, premiering on New Year's Day, Kaleidoscope. It's unlike any television series you've ever seen of its genre. He will join us live from California when we come back after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tune.com. Together, reaching over 75 million listeners around the world every month and growing. BTR is your home for NFL 2022. Check it out for the special edition tomorrow, Christmas Eve, 10 p.m., or the eve before Christmas Eve, I should say. That's tomorrow, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. The latest episode of NFL 2022. Tomorrow, eve before Christmas Eve, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And best be charged 24/7 always at YouTube.com. Available more on smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. Welcome back to the final half hour of this two-hour Jamboree edition of Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Abba with you at the bottom of the hour from New Weber, York, 42 degrees at the bottom of the hour. We have one more great guest coming your way in the 30 minutes ahead. And we also have one more chance to get into our classic trivia question of the week and win some prizes along the way. So stay tuned and be part of our program. Interact with our final guest with this number, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. On New Year's Day, Netflix is going to premiere its first original scripted series of 2023. And it's a very unique, groundbreaking one called Kaleidoscope. It's an experiment in what we call non-linear television. Here's the idea. The show is about a heist caper. It stars Giancarlo Esposito. 8 episodes comprise the program. But here's the key. You can watch the episodes in any order you want. So unlike most television shows, we have to see the show from the start. Episode 1, 2, 3, 4, etc. You can start anywhere along the 8 episodes, and you can get a great viewing experience. Joining us live from California in an internet exclusive, creator, writer, executive producer, and showrunner of Kaleidoscope, Eric Garcia. Eric, thank you for coming on. Happy holidays to you.
Happy holidays to you as well, Simon. And you explained that. I'm just going to take you around with me and have you explain it to people. You explained that very
well. Thank you. Thank you. I'll definitely consider that. Thank you for the compliment. I deeply appreciate it. How do you define non-linear television?
Well, I think you did a good example of it where linear television is sort of the traditional episode 1, episode 2, episode 3, where, you know, not only is there a chronological series of events that takes place, but it's a series of events that happen in the way that the filmmakers want you to experience it, right? So you can even look at something like Reservoir Dogs or Pulp Fiction, both of which are touchstones, obviously, for me. But even then, Tarantino wanted you to see those things when he wanted you to see those things. And as a result, he was able to use various writing and directing techniques to sort of lead you to things, give you surprises along the way that he controlled. What we're trying to do with Kaleidoscope is cede that ability to the viewer. And so just as you said, the episodes will come at people in different random orders. which means that where you come into the story, where you go with the story, you're going to be getting different pieces of information, different viewpoints on these characters than somebody else, than your neighbor next door, than your buddy at work. And in that sense, it becomes nonlinear because you are not going from 1 to 8. You're going, our episodes are named after colors, so you're going yellow, red, green, blue, somebody else going green, blue, red, yellow, et cetera, et cetera.
We'll get to how your series works in a couple of minutes, Eric. But first, what led you to basically say to yourself, I want to pioneer this kind of scripted television, and I'm going to be the one to do it? I'm not going to let somebody else do it. I'm going to be the one to do it and do it as creator, as writer, as executive producer, and showrunner. Really be, as I mentioned a number of times in the course of today, you're the mastermind behind this.
So probably I'm just a masochist. That's at heart. That's probably really what drives it. But, you know, it was the structural concept was something I had in mind for years. I was trying to sort of excavate and looking through my computer, and I found an email that I wrote in 2014 to a friend of mine who's a director. And I said, I think with batch streaming, we shouldn't have to watch things in order. There's no rule that we have to do this. We now actually have a way where we get everything at once. So I feel like there should be a way to do this. And I didn't know the way to do it. I started kind of setting out concepts and rules for how I think it would have had to have been done. And then slowly started to put it together. As for why I wanted to do it or why I wanted to be the one to do it, I think it's the reason any of us do the things we do, which is we feel like we have stories to tell, or in this case, ways to tell them, which then merged with the story I wanted to tell. And, you know, one of the things I love about working in television and film, but television in particular, is as writers, we do have a lot of control over the process, but there's also amazing collaboration. And I know enough to know there's tons of stuff I don't know. And so I get to work with really fantastic production designers and costume designers and prop people and directors. And that's super fun for me. I really like managing a team all around a vision and a concept. And when you find people who are willing and eager to throw down, which I did, it really just makes it special.
You're hearing Eric Garcia. He is the creator, writer, executive producer, and showrunner of Netflix's first original scripted series of 2023 and a rare effort at nonlinear scripted television. It's called Kaleidoscope. Originally it was called Jigsaw, changed the name, and it will be starting on New Year's Day on smart TV sets and smart devices all over the place, again, through Netflix. Eric joins us live from California this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Happy you're with us as well as we get ready to have the skies darken here in the New York metro area. Tom and I have been with you from the Big Apple, 42 degrees at the bottom of the hour. You have a question or comment for Eric, ring it in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. So either way, phone or the room, we appreciate what you have to say, and make sure you find the way to say it. Eric, let's break down the plot. I understand that it's all about a heist, and it's actually inspired by a true incident.
Yeah, it is inspired by a true incident with some sort of what-ifs thrown on top of it, right? This is obviously what we do day in, day out are the what-ifs. But during Hurricane Sandy, right afterwards, there was a vault. It's the DTCC, the Depository Trust Corporation. I can't remember the full thing, but it's owned by Bank of America and Chase. It's where a lot of the massive banks keep a lot of their assets, including unregistered bonds. Short version on unregistered bonds is they effectively act as money. They were outlawed in the 80s because they were being used for a lot of money laundering. But if you have them, they still you can still turn them in for money. So a lot of them hold on to them as assets. And they were keeping them in this vault at Water Street, this big, huge building on Water Street in downtown Manhattan. And it flooded. It was 60 feet below the ground. And water got in and flooded the entire thing. And there were articles that came out just in the days or week after Sandy about $70 billion worth of bonds had gotten destroyed, and they didn't know what to do. And about a week later, if you look all this up, there are articles that say, oh, well, no, it wasn't $70 billion worth. It was maybe it was $10 million. No big deal. No, nobody worry about this. And then a week later, it was like, hey, nothing's happened. Look the other way. And though I am sure to some degree it was all legitimate, part of me started thinking that's a really good way to make money disappear, to essentially use a natural disaster like that as a cover. And if I were trying to heist $70 billion from a place, I might find some way to do the same thing. So that's the basis of where the story came from. And then really what it was an excuse to sort of craft these characters and get into the notion of people who become obsessed with something. And never in a good heist film is it about the money, right? It's always about something else. And that's kind of what I began to put together.
And each of these episodes takes place in a different time frame, either before the heist or after the heist, whether it is a few weeks before, a number of years before, the morning after. How did you decide, okay, I'm going to use these time periods to make a point of view or to make an environment about this aspect of the heist, or either how it was pulled off or what had to be done to pull it off?
Yeah. So there were kind of two different structures that I was playing. Well, structurally, of course, the show itself and the ending order, but I mean sort of narrative and character structures, one of which was I wanted to be able to break these characters down into different facets so that wherever you do come in, you have a different viewpoint on these characters and their relationship to one another and your particular viewpoint to that. So in order to do that, partially what I wanted to do is be able to spread these time periods out. So as you point out, there's an episode that takes place 7 years before the heist. There's one that takes place 8 months after the heist. There's one that takes place 24 years before the heist, and that sort of thing. And then a bunch that take place around it, 5 days before, 1 minute after, that sort of thing. And one of the things that does as well is it breaks down sort of the facets of a heist. We also play with the notion of kind of these tropes that we have in heist games, right? So you've always got the putting the team together, right? So we've got that episode, so to speak. You've got the backstory episode. You have the turn. You have the betrayal episode, that kind of thing. And I think being able to sort of break it into these time periods allows people to grab onto, okay, this is the story I'm being told now. I can put that in my head. And now whichever one I watch next, I can combine that information with what I already know. So I understand this part of it, understand this part of it, understand this part of it. And it's not until you've watched the first 7 episodes in whatever random order is given to you or you choose that you then see the one thing is there is a canonical final episode, white, which is, of course, the combination of all the colors. White is the final episode, and that is the heist itself. Which is 1 hour real time, and you get to see everything that happens, and it also recontextualizes everything you've seen.
Mm-hmm. In a way, the challenge that you and your colleagues had putting this series together is very similar to the challenge that was posed by the people who wrote, produced, directed 24, which dealt with each episode dealt with an hour of a day of a particular situation. Mm-hmm. That Kiefer Sutherland and his character dealt with. And the whole thing was you had to structure each episode in such a way that that the credibility of that episode was built on the next, built on the next, built on the next. The continuity was very important, so on and so forth. When you're dealing with a program like this, a nonlinear deal, where you have different writers and you have different directors also, how do you try in a nonlinear way to achieve continuity so that for the viewer, no matter what episode you start with or whatever order you see the episodes, there's a continuity. There is a sense that the way you're calling the shot, you, the viewer, calling the shot on your creation is a good one.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the main challenge amongst all of it that we had is exactly that. Once I got the show up and going and greenlit at Netflix, I said, I need a writer's room of some really, really smart people who get what we're trying to do and recognize that, exactly as you pointed out, a lot of the narrative skills and tricks that we rely on as writers are out the window. So use 24. I love 24. And it's a perfect example where stuff builds, and at the end of the episode, you're like, well, I need to know what happens next. Well, next is not necessarily tried and true with us. Next could be anywhere. It could be before. It could be afterwards. And so what we tried to do was allow for each episode to have essentially seven, at least, there's more sometimes, but seven answers to questions that are asked in other episodes and seven questions that can then each be tied to another one of the episodes. So no matter what you watch, number one, number two, in your own going, of course, number three, number four, whatever order you end up watching in, you are always having some satisfaction, having that sense of, okay, now I know more than I did before. Oh, wait, now this is a twist on what I thought it was before, which meant that we were in a constant state of checking and rechecking. We did a thing in the writer's room that I just called speed dating, where every writer represented a different episode, and we went on speed dates, like 30-minute speed dates, where you would talk about your episodes to each other and find connections and find questions, and then a bell would ring and we would move on, and by the end, everybody had talked to everybody, and we made sure that there were connections. We had a million whiteboards in the room. Every episode had its whiteboards, but then, of course, and they were all on wheels, so we could kind of move them around between things, and we had to make sure that those things connected. Similarly, we had to make sure that every episode could work as a pilot, and that no matter what you started with, you had a viewpoint that was going to be different from somebody else. So, for example, there's the Yellow episode is pretty heavily centered on Leo and Giancarlo's character, and him sort of putting together the team. And so that's the building the team, the Ocean's 11, so to speak, episode. So you watch that and you have a certain viewpoint on it. And you say, okay, well, if we watch Yellow first, what's the show about? This show's about a guy who for some reason feels that he needs to break into this thing and he's assembling a team. Okay, fair enough. That's what the show is about. If you watch the Orange episode first, the Orange episode really focuses on our FBI agent, Nazan. And if you watch that first, you say, okay, she's intense. She's obsessed for some reason. I don't know why. And you go like, okay, if I'm watching this show, I think this is a show about a female FBI agent who is tracking down a gang of thieves. And so in my mind, I think the way the intention is, now, if you, after watching the Orange episode first, watch Blue or whatever, you're tracking that character. You're tracking that, whereas you might not be tracking her as the lead if you watch Yellow first. So in that sense, you would have a different viewing experience, even though you're all seeing the same stuff, right? We're not doing Bandersnatch. We're not doing The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, both of which I love in those interactive ways, but that's not what this is. You will see the same stuff as other people, but you will find different pieces of information. You will catch different things based on the order in which you've seen it.
In fact, Netflix is billing this program, your program, as an anthology show. And it sort of has, an interesting twist on that. It's interesting that we started our show almost 2 hours ago with Fantasy Island, which was one of the great anthology shows put together by Aaron Spelling, that had its own uniqueness to it. You had continuing characters, you had a continuing environment, you also had multiple plots within the program. Incidentally, mm-hmm. your show has got a very diverse set of cast, not only a diverse cast, but a diverse crew, diverse directors, diverse writing team. Maybe you might be surprised, though, Robert Townsend, who all remember both as a film director, as a TV director, and star, is one of the directors. And lately he's been doing stuff for the CW on various superhero shows. I'm curious, his contribution to what you did.
Yeah, Robert's great. Robert came in and did our well, I'd say final two. He was the last director to do the final block. He did the Violet and Green episodes, which actually, interestingly enough, are two of the ones that are in the deep past. Violet is 24 years before the heist, and Green is 7 years before the heist. And Robert's great. Robert's an actor's director, right? Like Robert, he's walked the walk. And I mean, I idolized Robert from Hollywood Shuffle days when I was a kid. So it was his energy. I do a good Robert impression, actually. But it was harder to do on the radio because he's got a physicality to him and just an energy that I think becomes very infectious. He's great with just, I mean, I remember we had this scene in Violet where there's a bunch of, it's at Country Club, and we had 200 backgrounds. And these are, you know, they're background, and they're New York background, right, because we shot everything in New York. And so they know what they're doing, but they're still background. They're not necessarily trained actors. And they were all older, right? Everybody's probably 50s and up. My mother is in the scene. My mother, she's always wanted to be in something. I've made fun to get her. And then she has a line opposite Rufus, actually. And Robert treats them like they are, that they're each stars. And he finds ways to motivate them. Giancarlo as well. Like, the two of them together, Giancarlo can get a background person feeling like they're Brando. It's pretty amazing to watch. I think each director brought a different feel and a different style. Mersey Almas did Orange and Pink, and I adore her, and she brings a comedy to things. Pink is I mean, they're all my favorites. They're all my baby episodes, but Pink is so darkly funny, and Mersey has such an amazing dark sense of humor. Russell Fine, who was our producing director, did Red and White and jumped into it hard and fast. He didn't have a ton of prep time on a couple of things he did, and it's huge action. I mean, White is pretty much 60 minutes of straight action. And really knocked it out of the park. And Everardo Gout, who's also just got a sense of style. They each, just like the writers, I mean, like, everybody brings something different. And then you mentioned the cast. You know, I'm very fortunate to get the people that we got. I think a lot of it was we got lucky because we were coming off of lockdown. We started in the summer of 2021. Heavy, heavy COVID precautions the entire time. We all wore masks, 12 hours a day on set, 6 feet apart, et cetera, et cetera. Shot our way through Omicron and had shutdowns, had to deal with the same stuff everybody deals with. But I think because we were coming off lockdown, some people were available to us who otherwise, Giancarlo was shooting Better Call Saul, but then had a break. And we were like, great, if he's available, my God, he's a perfect Leo. Same thing with Paz, with Rufus, with Tati. I mean, really all of them. And then some of the ones who I think I'm excited about people getting to know, Rose Elbe, who plays Judy, Peter Markendra, who plays Stan, Yushin Noor, who plays Nizan, Bubba Wiley, who plays Toby, Jordan Mendoza, who's also a fantastic writer, who plays RJ. So we got really lucky with the cast. It doesn't always work out that way. But they loved what we were doing, and they really got deep into their stuff, which I really dug.
If you came in late on today's program, we're going to give you another chance to answer our classic trivia question. Stay tuned. That is coming up in a few minutes before we wrap up at the top of the hour. Eric, one of Netflix's top performing people, was interviewed by The Hollywood Reporter earlier this week, and he said that one of the keys for 2023 is going to be to continue to innovate in storytelling. If your series works, are we going to see more experiments in nonlinear storytelling? And are you already starting to get feelers from other writers who are saying, bravo to what you're doing. You're taking the risk for all of us. If you work, we're going to carry on.
I mean, it's interesting because, nobody has seen it yet. Some people have seen it here and there, of course. But for the most part, the way Netflix works is, January 1st will come along and everybody sees it at once. So, people know about it. People who have read the scripts, obviously, I've been having conversations for years. And I'm fascinated by not just nonlinear structure, but other ways to tell stories on broadcast television, film, whatever it happens to be in stage, whatever sort of format you choose. And I know there's a lot of other people who are the same way. I very much hope it resonates with people. I hope it breaks through some of the noise. There's so much stuff on it. There's so much great stuff on, too. I mean, whether it's the Platinum Age of TV or whatever people want to call it. But either way, it's balkanized and it's cluttered. There are so many shows that people say, you got to watch this. And I say, oh, I know I have to watch that. I wish I could. I only have so many hours during the day. Truth is, I have about an hour at night with my wife to sit on the sofa and watch something before I fall asleep, if we're being honest. I hope this is something that excites people. It seems to be something that's grabbing attention from the concept and from, a cast and the look of it. You mentioned before it's an anthology. We'll see what happens. Hopefully it does well, and we'll see how it all goes. But there are potentials for this story itself is a single 8 episodes. This story, these characters, I don't anticipate coming back to this specific show. thing, but the idea of playing with structure is something that I would love to continue to do.
And we have about 30 seconds left. Do you see a second season of this? And no matter what happens, maybe another try, maybe taking a different cut at this kind of storytelling or another innovation?
Yeah, I think there's definitely another version of this. I mean, I love this version of this, but I think there are other ways to go at it, to skin the cat. And whether it's this or something else, it's, you know, I have other projects in the works that play with some structural things here and there. And I think it's an interesting way forward.
The program is Kaleidoscope, and it will premiere New Year's Day on Netflix, available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices, a very unique experiment in nonlinear storytelling. And who knows, we may be seeing the beginning of more new innovations in scripted television, maybe unscripted television as well. We will see. Again, if you want to know more about the series, go to Netflix.com. That's Netflix.com on the web. And again, Kaleidoscope premieres on Netflix New Year's Day, January 1st, available on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices, as well as multi-channel bundles, and some cases through your local cable operator. Eric Garcia, thank you very, very much for coming on. All the very best with this series, and hopefully we may be starting a brand new trend that who knows where it's going to go. But one thing's for sure, this could be for people who love television, quality TV, something very, very special and a real groundbreaker. And we're delighted we had you on the program.
Awesome. Thank you, Simon. It was fun. I am now going to listen and try to answer the trivia questions, because I love trivia. So I'm TV. So there you go.
You got it, Eric. Take care. To you, your cast and crew, and everybody on Netflix, have a very happy holiday season. All the very best this coming year.
Thanks, Simon. You too. Talk to you soon.
Eric Garcia joining us live from California in an exclusive interview from Kaleidoscope here on Swabi Televised. And here is that classic trivia question one last time for those of you who came in late. On The Walking Dead, Rick Grimes was sheriff of what location? On The Walking Dead, Rich Grimes was sheriff of what location? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com, 704@yahoo.com. If you're first with the correct answer by the email, you get Speak Now, the classic Taylor Swift CD, plus from our recent guest Sheldon Epps, whose BET Plus movie, Christmas Party Crash, is getting a special screening tomorrow night, simulcast on BET and BET. His new book, My Own Direction, The Black Man's Journey in the American Theater. If we don't get a winner by end today, we'll post the question tomorrow on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. In order to win, you got to play in, so do so and all the very best. Well, nearly 2 hours ago, we told you we had a very special episode on hand, and I think we really delivered. Thanks to all of our guests. Thanks to all of you for being here. Tomorrow, Juan Ayala from Media Village. He's a terrific columnist and a great video host as well. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out our podcast, available all over the place, and our website, tomorrowbetelevised.onpodium.com. Love to hear from you. Communicate by email, by social media, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. We do respond to what you have to say, because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants. They are not those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Toews, BTR's General Manager, Jay Sonnenberg, is Head of Content. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you very much for your listening. Have a wonderful rest of your Thursday. If you're getting ready to go out and see your family and friends over the Christmas weekend, if you're going by rail or airline, please take extra time getting there and also check in with your carriers. And keep tuned to the Weather Channel, AccuWeather, and other sources of weather information, and you get to where you're going in great shape. We're back tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. You know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune Radio, and all of our other destinations. Whatever you do, now and then, make it safe and make it great. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.